Victor Vigiani here in studio with me. Let's head down to Nevada, shall we? Let's go visit with Colm Kelleher. Colm is with the National Institute for Discovery Science. They published a paper in the last week that has made the wires. Colm Kelleher, welcome back to this program.
Hi, good evening. It's good to be with you again.
It's good to have you with us again, creating a little bit of a stir with this paper, huh?
Yeah, I was quite surprised. We published a report about 10 days ago on our website outlining the current status of the so-called flying triangle, Enigma. And what we did was we brought together our database of about 400 sightings in the last 4 years that we've got. We combined that with MUFON's database of triangle sightings, which is about 500 cases.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went to Larry Hatch, and he very kindly donated his cases, which are about 300 to 400 cases. So we had quite a decent database. And what we did was plotted them on a map of the United States. Then we wrote up a report on that. And space.com, which is a fairly well-known aerospace website, picked it up about 3 days ago. And we noticed, as you mentioned, that it was on MSNBC, and then it went on the wires. So there does seem to be a lot of interest in these large, silent, usually dark-colored flying triangles, and they seem to be dominating the UFO caseload that we have, at least in the last 4 or 5 years.
That's strange, isn't it? Those are the ones that seem to get the most screen space as far as those UFO people who are online are concerned. And they're pretty spectacular-looking things. The one that really strikes a chord with me, the one that I remember, wasn't so much a triangle as described as a boomerang that was over Phoenix that covered a, I think they said a block and a half or 2 blocks. One wingtip was a block and a half in one direction, and the other wingtip was another block and a half in the other direction. And this thing, you could almost see through it. You could almost see the stars through it. But there were these sort of dim lights up along the its superstructure.
Yeah, that was quite a case, actually. Where I'm speaking from, which is Henderson, Nevada, that's where this thing was first sighted as it moved down through pretty well the whole state of Arizona, ending up down south of Tucson, I believe, was the last sighting of the thing. But yeah, you're absolutely right. This thing moved at like 30 miles an hour. It was low, and probably between 500 and 700 witnesses saw this as it moves down. So this was not your common or garden one or two eyewitnesses looking at a light in the sky. This was police officers, pilots, truck drivers, you name it, mm-hmm. saw this thing.
I want to tell our listeners who are online that linked from tonight's program listing at virtuallystrange.net and go to Strange Days Indeed is a link to the report that we're talking about and the maps that have been put together there of all these flying triangle sightings. Pretty impressive. I mean, it's amazing. You said, what, 700 reports over the last few years?
Yes. We opened a hotline at NIDS in late 1999. And since then, if you take out all of the other UFO cases from what we've got in the last 4 years and just stick with triangles, we've got over 400 cases. And then we combine that with the MUFON and Larry Hatch's, which, mm-hmm. and we know that these are not overlapping databases because one of the things we do is screen for who else these are being reported to. So we're heading towards 1,000 cases, and what really surprised us was that when we put them on the map of the USA, originally what we had done was we had plotted where they were with respect to a subset of Air Force bases in the United States because obviously, one of the possibilities here is that these things are unacknowledged United States Air Force mm-hmm. aircraft. So initially, when we had smaller numbers, we thought we saw a very tentative correlation between a subset of Air Force bases, and that's Air Force Materiel Command and Air Mobility Command Air Force bases. They're primarily to do with moving materiel and troops in these big transport aircraft. So we thought we saw a tentative correlation, but with these huge numbers, we then plotted them on the map and found that they were much more correlated with both population centers and interstate highways. And obviously, you know, we have a chicken and egg thing going there.
Yes.
You know, that's where all the people are.
Yeah. United States Air Force normally does not fly secret aircraft over densely populated areas. They tend to do it out of places like Groom Lake, Area 51, mm-hmm. down in your neck of the woods, your neck of the desert, in Nevada, or out over the ocean where they're not going to be seen. But the concentration, and looking at the maps here, is, as you say, over densely populated areas. Mm-hmm. We even had a report of a flying triangle over a subway station here out along Danforth Avenue in Toronto a few years back.
And 3 years ago, I received a report from two ladies in Barrie, Ontario, that saw a huge triangle late at night, about 2 o'clock in the morning.
Barrie's a city about an hour and a bit north of Toronto, for those of you who don't live in the immediate neighborhood.
Colm, I'd like to ask you, you've got all the stats you've got, just an amazing correlation of data and the way you put the databases together. And beginning at 1980, you've got the spikes in your graph. Is there any mention or indication of anything pre-1980?
Well, yes, there are actually. There are lower numbers, but these things have been seen all the way back into the 1960s. Now, obviously, you can ask the question, are we talking about the same object? Are we talking about different types of objects? Because mm-hmm. we know, even from crunching the data that we have, there are definitely two very different types of aircraft here, one of which is the kind of wedge-shaped object that is shown actually in the report. There's a depiction of what one of the eyewitnesses saw, and a graphics artist basically drew it up. So it's not a classic triangle, it's more like a wedge-shaped object. Mm-hmm. The second major group of craft are perfect triangles, and these can be either equilateral triangles or longer triangles. Both the wedge-shaped object and the triangles are about a football field in size. In other words, 300 feet by 300 feet, if you roughly approximate a triangle. So going back into the 1960s, we're not sure of which type of aircraft was seen, but the numbers of cases really started escalating in 1997. We have a graph where we compare, in this report, where we compare actually four different databases. If you add the online database from Peter Davenport's New Fork, combine that with the numbers from NIDS, from MUFON, and from Larry Hatch's database, you can really see a fairly dramatic escalation beginning in 1997 and continuing all the way to 2003. So if you combine those kinds of numbers of sightings with the fact that these are over heavily populated areas, as Earl just said, there is no possibility, or at least in our minds, there's no possibility that you could call this a covert program. In other words, if this is deployment of terrestrial aircraft, it's being done so with absolute brazen openness. There's no attempt to hide. We have so many eyewitness reports of these objects being 500 feet, 1,000 feet, sometimes even a couple of hundred feet, over heavily populated areas that there isn't even an air safety concern there.
Mm-hmm. That brings me to my next point, Colm, just if I could interrupt you. What is the possible method of propulsion of these things? These things are slow-moving. They hang there. There's very little evidence that people report any kind of a large sound or boom to these things. Sometimes there's a low drone and hum. But right. any indications to how these things are kept in the air?
We can sort of glean some evidence from what people describe, how they turn. They don't turn like conventional aircraft. They can spin on a dime. In other words, they don't bank when they turn like a classic aircraft that uses lift in order to generate power and altitude. They can spin on a dime, they can move sideways, they can move backwards. So their propulsion system is not based on classic sort of, you know, aerofoils and lift. It's something completely different. But in terms of speculating what it could be, I really would have little or no idea. We've had a lot of people sort of speculating about maybe it's one of the very advanced version of the, you know, the lifter type technology, ion drive. But, you know, I'm not a physicist, so I wouldn't...
You don't want to speculate.
Yeah, I wouldn't go too far down that road because there's really no evidence. But as you mentioned, we've had lots and lots of cases where if the eyewitness actually gets out of their car up close and personal with these things and they're maybe 500 feet away, they can usually hear a very, very low hum. But most of the time these are silent. If they're 1,000 feet away, they can't hear anything.
What a puzzle that is, isn't it?
Yeah.
To go back to that whole thing of testing aircraft, if it's a United States government design, then you wouldn't test it over extremely highly populated areas, because you'd then propagate what the Air Force claims is the myth of UFOs. I can't see them being test projects. They've got to be doing something else to be over highly populated areas. And as you say, there's a safety concern. Highly populated areas have very busy airports. They're not scheduled flights. Nobody knows they're coming. They suddenly show up. Do you know what the stats are on radar tracking of some of these flying triangles, Colin Kelleher?
Well, we had a really interesting case in July of 2001, which is about 8 weeks before 9/11 happened, at Newark International Airport, which was one of the airports that, during 9/11. It was a dramatic sighting of about 30 or 40 cars were pulled over on the New Jersey Turnpike watching this very, very big object, and it was within striking distance of Newark International Airport. And just by a series of coincidences, we managed to get to talking with one of the air traffic controllers who was working at Newark International Airport on that night. And very kindly, they went into the tapes, and they did say that on that night, there were several unidentified objects without transponders picked up on radar right beside, you know, one of the busiest international airports in the world. But we were not able to get the official version of that. What we got was an unofficial confirmation by one of the air traffic controllers. And as a control to that experiment, we asked them to randomly pick another night and go in and run the tapes and see if there were any other objects picked up, and there were none when they checked on the other night. So, in other words, there's a really good likelihood that these objects that were flying, that or this large object that was seen at Newark International Airport, did not have a transponder. So that by itself is a real air safety risk, flying in the vicinity of a major international airport, because we're talking less than 20 miles.
And of course, when either civilian or military aircraft all carry those little boxes that answer with a code when they get pinged by air traffic controllers and the radar. You know, we must not think that this is just purely a North American phenomenon, these flying triangles. There was the big case over Belgium in 1989 when two F-16s chased one of these flying triangles across Belgium. And the Belgian Air Force talked about it very freely and very openly. At one point, I think, was that the Belgian Air Force or was that the Iranian Air Force?
It was the Belgian Air Force.
It was the Belgian Air Force who locked on and and then had their weapons disabled after they'd locked on with their radar on this thing. So this is not just a North American phenomenon. And looking at these maps at the National Institute for Discovery Sciences website, that's NIDSCI, NIDSCI.org. If you go there, you can look at these maps for yourself, and that the whole report on flying triangles released about 10 days ago. But you look at the three maps from the NIDS database, from the MUFON database, and then the Larry Hatch database. You look at these locations of triangles that have been seen over North America, and the concentration is over highly densely populated areas. I mean, it's just mind-blowing that this kind of conduct, if you like, would occur. And nobody seems to be making a fuss about it from the Federal Aviation Authority or from the military. You know, it's just mind-boggling. Colin, have you managed to get any sort of comment out of either the Air Force or the Federal Aviation Authority?
Well, there's really been a deafening silence. One of the classic cases, as you probably remember, is the five police officers who saw this gigantic aircraft in Illinois,
yes,
near St. Louis, Missouri, it's on the border. Mm. And this aircraft actually tracked in a southwesterly direction on January the 5th of 2000, almost over the perimeter of Scott Air Force Base. So we sent two investigators over to the area, and one of the investigators actually gained entrance to Scott Air Force Base and sat in the office of the officer in charge of the Air Force Office of Special Investigations, and basically was asking these questions. And to cut a long story short, there was a complete denial from the Air Force that they knew of any aircraft in the vicinity. And this thing had flown literally over the perimeter of Scott Air Force Base, Not only that, they also denied that they had launched any aircraft from Scott Air Force Base. So either they were unaware of this thing as it tracked over their airspace, and we're talking about 1,000 feet, we're talking about a football field-sized aircraft that was silently tracking very, very slowly and very brightly lit. So it seems amazing that it would have gone over there without being seen. I mean, it defies logic.
Especially coming from military, whose watchword is vigilance, yes?
Right.
One would think that automatically, if one of these things is floating around, that someone's got to scramble jets, or they've been told not to scramble jets to go up and see what's going on.
That's right.
That amazes me in itself.
Yeah, there has to be some kind of idea of what's going on, because particularly post 9/11, we had the governor of Kentucky, for example, who was flying in a private aircraft about a month ago towards Reagan Airport in Washington, D.C. The transponder failed on the aircraft, and a couple of aircraft were just being launched from Andrews to shoot that aircraft down, basically.
My goodness.
In other words, the airspace over the United States is extremely heavily monitored right now. And we had a call from two eyewitnesses in 2002. They reported two very, very large objects that were moving slowly over southeast of College Park, Maryland, which is within that 40-mile radius of restricted airspace near the White House. They were flying silently. They were flying at about 1,000 feet. They were heading directly towards Langley Air Force Base in Virginia. But they were violating that that restriction on restricted airspace near the White House. So, again, there was nothing launched. Again, these huge triangle aircraft were moving very silently. There's got to be some kind of situation where there is knowledge, whether it's an acceptance on the part of the United States government that these things are violating United States airspace, or else it's ours. And we have not been able to crack that particular nut, because the only way to crack it really is to get a blanket admission from the Air Force. And quite frankly, if they're flying brightly lit aircraft over major populated areas, it's not a covert program. So one cannot imagine that it would be in the top secret category.
Sure.
They're certainly making no attempt to keep it top secret by flying in this manner.
Yes. Colm Kelleher, I want to thank you for joining us tonight, sir, on this Labor Day weekend. I hope that you crack this nut eventually so that we find out a little more about what it is that we're seeing in the skies around the world. You want to read the report? Virtuallystrange.net. Click Strange Days Indeed. It'll take you there. Good night, Colm Kelleher. Thank you, sir.
Good night. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Good night. We'll come back with Victor Vigiani, and we'll talk some Canadian UFO information stuff.